All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. I'm talking to you from New York City on this, the 13th day of April, 2021. I do like to remind you, I'm the editor of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. We like to plug Chen Lin as well, his letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? In the mining sector as well, and primarily, I would say, the most value coming to you through the biotechs, which is an area that he's really specialized in and done very well for his subscribers. And Michael Oliver is with us today, too. It's olivermsa.com to follow up with Michael, who you'll be hearing from just in a moment or two. And I want to thank all of you for listening to the show, making one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. And send along any comments you have about the show to questions4taylor@gmail.com, questions the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. And we do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Today's sponsors, Novo Resources, Sitka Gold Corp., El Oro Resources, Irving Resources, Hannon Metals, Fury Gold Mines, Great Bear Resources, Lion One Metals, SK Mining, and Firefox Gold. I don't mention often enough that the sponsors in this show are invited to become sponsors only after I have chosen to cover them in my newsletter, Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. In other words, these companies are sponsors first and foremost, not because they make this show financially viable, but first and foremost because I think they have great potential to enhance the financial well-being of my subscribers and hopefully some of the listeners out there as well when they hear about these companies. In every case, I have purchased shares in these companies that sponsor this show. And I just thought I should let you know that these are vetted companies. They're not just companies that say, here, I have some money, give me some coverage. No, that's not the way it works. I should just mention here some of the highlights that recently, some of the things that have taken place with our sponsors. Great Bear Resources, for example, now they the spinoff, the royalty company, is now tradable. It is trading in Canada and in the U.S., so if you happen to own Great Bear at the time of the spinoff, you now are the proud owner of Great Bear Royalty, which I think is going to be a huge success longer term. I'm planning to hold on to mine for a long time. Regarding SK Mining Corp., now that company put out a press release today stating that they have reviewed all the data from its 2020 exploration campaign and has conclusively identified multiple mineralized horizons on its 100% owned SK Precious Metals Rich Volcanogenic Massive Sulfide Project in the Golden Triangle of British Columbia. Now, this newly synthesized model of the seafloor mineralized system demonstrates that at least 6 stratigraphic units are prospective for precious metals rich VMS deposits across this 526 square kilometer property. And I will certainly be talking more about this in my newsletter, hopefully this weekend. Dr. John Dedecker, who is the Vice President of Exploration, will be providing a discussion of this with a Toronto geological group at 4 o'clock today, and I hope to get some feedback from that on to my subscribers. Also just mentioned that El Oro Resources, which is on, I think, to a massive silver discovery in Bolivia, just put out an announcement today, 73.9 meters of 155 grams per ton silver equivalent. And Irving Resources, which I will be talking to Quentin Henning about very shortly in one of these shows, they just announced a strategic investment from Newmont Mining. They just put in $6 million to participate in that company's projects in Japan. So there's an awful lot going on. I'm really proud to have my current list of sponsors because I'm expecting some enormous wealth creation from many, if not most of them, in the weeks and months to come. And one of them also is Lion Minds, which you will hear from, you will hear about from Dr. Quentin Henning. He'll be on the show. We'll be talking to him about the Tuvatu Alkaline Project in just a few minutes from now. I've titled today's show, Living and Investing in a Dystopian Digital Currency World. David McElvenny, Michael Oliver, and as I mentioned, Quentin Henning is joining me today. The handwriting is on the wall now for everyone to see. Freedom to spend your money as you wish without government permission seems about ready to end. At least that's the way it seems. That's because a mismanaged global monetary system now requires not only low interest rates, but negative interest rates, perhaps, to hold the system together. You may have heard of bail-ins. Well, after the 2008 financial crisis, they started talking about bailouts. Well, they had bailouts before. Now they're talking about bail-ins, which means that simply, if the banks get into trouble, they'll take money from your checking account to help bail them out. So you are bailing them out. Bail-ins don't necessarily require a dramatic banking crisis like we had in 2008. A slower-moving crisis like the one unfolding now right before our eyes, in which the U.S. will likely need to move to a negative rate of interest, at least that's what many believe, that may be in the cards. And if so, that means they'll be taking money out of your account, out of your checking account, which they can do legally, by the way, because when you put your money in the bank, you are basically providing an unsecured loan to that bank. Well, when you make loans and they're unsecured, tough nookies if you lose some money. That's the way it goes. To keep you from having that option, though, of course, now they're planning something different. To keep you in the banking system, they're not going to allow you to take out cash in the future. At least that seems to be what the planning, that there's that kind of planning in place if they need to employ it. The whole idea is to you have to make sure that the banks are solvent. So keeping in mind that the bankers, they can do this. They have the legal rights to do this, and that's what the planners are expecting. In other words, what the elites are setting all of us up for is to deny our rights to the fruits of our labor and to our property. Sounds kind of Marxist to me, but anyway, that seems to be what's taking place, and we hope and pray that's not the case, but that seems to be the plans that they have for us. In the second half of today's show, I will be speaking to David McElvenny about his views on interest rates, the prospects for digital-only money, and how that might impact our investment decisions going forward. As I just mentioned, Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me in just a few minutes to give us an update on Lion One. But right now, I'm really happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is here with me once again. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
It's always good to have you, and I just want to get your ideas on T-bonds and gold. You have been saying, and it seems to be playing out once again, that they are both safe havens, and when the stock market gets a little wobbly, the bond market gets stronger, money goes into that, or to gold. Gold and silver both are stronger today. Comments on that, and how long do you think that will continue?
Well, it's very clear that T-bonds and relative markets like TLT, the ETF of 20-year U.S. government debt, have trended down from a high in those markets in August, coincident with gold. So as rates have risen, gold has dropped. And during that same period of time, especially since late last summer, the stock market's been quite strong. They made their low in March, but they really got strong starting late summer last year. In fact, the NASDAQ 100 went ballistic during that time, parabolic blow-off, we would call it. So, but what I'm looking at here is that, technically speaking, the T-bond market, meaning as it drops in price, rises in yield, is coincident with gold and inverse. Both of them are inverse to the U.S. stock market for the time being. I think that the logic of higher interest rates coincident with higher inflation, which makes sense, will in fact occur, but I don't think we're in it right now. I think that this is a trap. I think anybody who's getting short T-bonds now expecting higher interest rates because of higher inflation is premature. Technically, I can see the potential, and I think it's pretty strong, for a very sharp rebound in the T-bonds and TLT and so forth to the upside, meaning a drop in rates, for several months. And I suspect strongly that if that occurs, the reason for it will not be inflation or interest rates, that kind of thing. It's simply a response of asset managers moving money into a safe haven as the stock market wobbles. I think the stock we cheered over the last week or two, a new high in the stock market, especially the NASDAQ 100, which had made a high in September. I'm thinking of Amazon right now, which is a major component. But while the S&P's made new highs over the last few months, NASDAQ 100 and the leading stocks within the NASDAQ 100, names we all know, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, did not. And so they lagged in performance noticeably to the broad stock market, which a lot of people have identified and noticed and commented on. So the leadership has waned. In fact, it's technically broken in terms of relative performance. But we needed, in certain of these markets, especially NASDAQ 100, I think, to go make a new high, and we've now done that. And now it may persist for another week or so, but we see vulnerability under the stock market, meaning after we've done this new cheering of a new high in the NASDAQ 100, that if it wobbles off very much at all, several percentage points, in fact, you could start a domino effect to the downside again. In other words, that this could be a very much a bull trap, meaning was the NASDAQ peak several months ago, it goes up and spikes out that high. If it doesn't sustain, and I don't think it will, and wobbles back down, then you'll really see the T-bond start to move upside. And I suspect during that same period of time, you're going to see gold moving upside. So large asset managers will be moving assets back into the two categories that they moved into late in 2019, early 2020, prior to the big drop in the stock market. So that's what I think is about to happen. Right now, T-bonds are rallying a bit today. In fact, they are where they were a month ago. So all the talk about rising rates, that really ceased about a month ago. And gold, of course, made a low in early March and tested it again in late March. We circled that low in early March and defined it as probably the low for the corrective process. And right now we're about 4.5-5% off that low and challenging overhead resistance levels, which I think we're going to break through. So anyway, watch the stock market, because it's a variable that few people are thinking about on the downside. And if think about this. If you're worried about the Fed reversing their monetary policy instead of being so dovish and worrying about inflation, if you if you hobble that stock market, they're not going to quit. You know, that's an asset category they will defend to the hilt.
It would seem so, and certainly all the it seems like you know, the lawmakers, the elites are definitely in the stock market big time, and all hell would break loose if the powers that be don't try to defend it, I would think. And so Michael, how can this trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of deficits be financed if at these low rates? They can't be. It has to come through money, I would think, money printing.
No, they don't need a public to buy the stuff. No, there's no question about it.
No.
You know, if the problem is tax collection, for example, if we find many non-filers this year relative to prior years simply because they can't pay, or delinquent filers or insufficient filers who can't pay the full amount, et cetera, and that percentage number starts to get a little bit too high, they're going to have to start thinking about other sources of full revenue for the federal budget. And we know where that's going to come from. The Fed will simply buy the bonds. And so the government just issues them. The Fed will buy it, print the money. It's done. And, you know, they don't need.
But
they
at
don't
some
need taxes.
Point, at, but at some point, then the dollar becomes suspect. I mean, it has
yes,
to.
Yes, and it's it's starting to cave again. We had a multi-month recovery bounce in the dollar, which everybody was impressed by. We were not. And it's as far as we're concerned, that rally is now over. It's now breaking back down. And the dollar right now is in the 91s, dollar index I'm speaking of. If you get it back in the 89s again, kiss it goodbye. It's going to drop sharply at that point.
Real quickly, Michael, 30 seconds. What about Bitcoin? Yeah. Will Bitcoin benefit if the equity market starts to topple?
Well, our only concern about Bitcoin is that regulators will come in and do something to restrain it or control it or corral it. Push it into a corner because it's competitive with federal government control over interest rates, money supply, if you have a competing private currency that doesn't expand exponentially, then it's a potential threat to their control over money.
Absolutely.
And therefore,
absolutely.
Already Yellen and ECB
Jay Powell.
have used terms that, like criminal as regards Bitcoin.
Right.
So it's
right.
obviously an intent to regulate or control. So beware of that potential.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Well, we have
hobble,
to leave it go
hobble
with that.
The Bitcoin bubble. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for being with us again. And we always grateful to have you, and we'll look forward to it. Seeing you again in a couple of weeks from now.
Thanks, Jay.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with us to talk about Lion One Metals. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canadian exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable, high-grade gold assets across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Led by a management team of proven explorers and developers, Fury aims to generate major catalysts and performance per share by advancing exploration campaigns across Canada. Fury is well positioned to create value for investors with low risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under Fury. To learn more, go to FuryGoldMines.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am Jay Taylor, your host, and I'm really happy to have Dr. Quentin Henning with me once again, this time to give us an update on Lion One Metals, a company that he is an advisor to, as he is with many companies, many very exciting companies, many of which are, some of which at least are our sponsors of this show, and Lion One Metals is one of those companies, has about 156 million shares, $1.26 in Canadian money today. About 196 million Canadian market cap. Now, this stock is down about half of where it was in August of last year. I think even though everything is going, as far as I know, everything is going really well. It is an exciting story, as Quentin has talked about it before on this show, so we're really glad to have him back to give us an update. Thanks for joining us again, Quentin.
Absolutely, Jay, anytime.
Yes, and so I understand there's 6 drills turning there now. And this Tuvutu project in Fiji, and a couple of them are going very deep in the system, and some of them are from underground, I believe. They're doing a lot of underground drilling. Fill us in on what the company has achieved since we last spoke, and also maybe give us an idea of what their drill program is going to look like, what they're up to this year, because I think they're also advancing towards some production, perhaps.
Yeah, look, this is a very important time for the company because that production side is becoming it's coming more and more to the forefront. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. We have 6 drills on site. I'll kind of break this down. We'll talk about exploration for a bit, and then I'll explain why, from this point forward, exploration now has to work very closely with the development side of this story, because really what we're doing is going to go ahead and start moving the whole project towards production. Right, so this is, again, a very important step for the company. Now, first of all, a little background about the deposit. Tuvutu, which is what we call an alkaline gold deposit, it is associated with an extinct volcano. It's about 4.5 million years old. this volcano, the magma, had a lot of alkali metal dissolved in it, in particular potassium. That's why we call these alkaline gold systems. And these magmas carry a lot of gold with them. So when they come up and then they start to crystallize in the crust, that gold has to come off, and it tries to find a home. And what it does is it gets flushed out into the little fractures and cracks in the area above the magma chamber at depth. So you end up creating some very high-grade gold deposits out of this. So it's a high-grade vein system. It's narrow veins, mm-hmm. right? And this is typical of these deposits. Now, there's another deposit nearby called Vaticola. It was also called the Emperor Mine way back in the day. It's a very famous mine. It's produced over 7 million ounces. It started mining a little over 85 years ago. Remarkable deposit, one of the longest live mines on planet Earth. It actually helped found the helped build the company Western Mining, which is a famous Australian company back mm-hmm. then. Anyway, Vaticola, look, this is the perspective people need to take with this story. When they started operating Vaticola, they did not drill the thing ad nauseum to 7 million ounces and then go, let's see, should we capitalize this? Should we, you know, they didn't scratch their head for years and years and drill. They basically said, okay, we have a deposit. You know, they had enough information in hand to go mine, and the rest of the 7 million ounces basically unfolded as they mined. You know, they opened up new areas, which allowed them to drill new areas, advance the resource definition, yada, yada. Basically, you know, mm-hmm. repeats, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the approach we're going to take at Tuvatu. Exploration is progressing. It's been a wet year. This has been the wettest year in anybody's memory. We've had three typhoons just absolutely soaked on site, but it is drying out now. The dry season starts approximately this time of year. And the guys on site told us that they saw dust coming up from the tracks of wheels on cars recently.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? So exploration going forward looks like this. We're going to have three prongs now to the exploration. We have six rigs on site. Two are deep capacity surface rigs. So these drill from surface down to deep levels. Two are shallow capacity surface rigs. They basically can drill shallow holes from surface. And then two are the underground rigs that we just bought. These will be drilling from underground inside the existing decline. Okay, so what are we doing? So the three things. Firstly, we're going to drill with one of the deep capacity rigs. We're going to continue drilling the high grade that we hit late last year underneath Tuvatu. Okay, so that's going to be followed up on a routine basis with one of the deep rigs. The second deep rig is going to start testing new areas around the caldera. All right, so as things dry out, we can get up and start drilling underneath Banana Creek and other targets that we've generated recently. The third set of rigs, which are the two shallow surface rigs as well as the underground rigs, guess what they're going to be? They're going to be drilling what we call infill drilling and, mm-hmm. and basically resource, you know, mine planning drilling, we'll call it, okay?
Yeah.
These rigs are going to be focused like a laser on drilling holes in and around the existing resource to define as sharply and precisely as possible where we should go mining. All right? So this is important. So we have three prongs. Deep underneath Tuvatu, deep or new targets elsewhere in the caldera, that's second. And then the third is the infill or mine development style of drilling that we need. Now, with the exploration side, kind of that story told, now I can talk a little bit about the development side.
Mm-hmm.
To make a mine, you need a team. Lion One has some members of the team already in place, but I have worked very closely with Wally and his team to build that. We're actually going to introduce more people into the picture over the next couple of months. It'll probably be, you know, that story will be told over the next 2 or 3 months. These are people that I know quite well and I know are committed to staying in Fiji long term, and will be able to help the company advance the asset on both the exploration and development side, by the way. Okay, so mm-hmm. development side, look, what does the picture look like? Right now, the company's deciding at what kind of a production rate it would like to target. That's one aspect. The second aspect is putting the team together. That's where I've been helping with them some. Third aspect is timing around this. And how do we make this go? Because really this development is going to be what dovetails with exploration from here mm-hmm. on out. It's kind of going back to that Vaticola scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I would say over the next 2 or 3 months, you're going to see the company start to talk more and more about its focus on advancing development. You know, they're going to put a decline down. This decline is separate. It's not the same decline that we have in place right now. This is a new decline that's going to be put in a strategic place to allow development of the resources. It's also going to allow us to have further underground access to drill different areas. Okay, so that's kind of the first off the dock. The second part is the processing, the mill. The company's looking at different scenarios around the mill. Again, the size hasn't been set yet, but they're getting close. And as far as the metallurgy goes, they're looking at different scenarios, like different flow sheets for this mill. I would say by May, maybe June, early June, they will have a lot of this in hand and present to the market a very clear story on how to advance it. So we're in a transitional phase. You know, we're going from, say, pure exploration towards the development stage at this point, but it's going to get more and more exciting.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, so in terms of the CapEx and all that, is that's really uncertain at this point in time, depending on the flow sheets and how they decide to mine and how much they're going to mine and all of that.
These are
metrics that we'll have to wait for over the next few months.
It is true this is going to take a little time to put together, but here's the great news, okay? Lion One has, last I heard, a little over $61 million in the bank. That comes from the financing they did as well as the warrant exercise last year. That puts them in a very, very special, good position, we'll call it, to advance both the exploration and the development.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look forward to it, and hopefully some of those deep holes come in nice and juicy, and people start getting really excited about this story before they have to raise money to put the mine. Well, maybe they don't have to raise that much, but I'm sure they're going to have to raise some. And one way or another, $61 million won't get you into production. I'm pretty sure of that. So, in any event, should be a lot of excitement. So we expect a pretty regular news flow then, I suppose.
From here on out with the dry season, yeah, things should improve in terms of news flow. Correct.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you, Quentin. Thank you so much for giving us that update, and really helps us focus again on this story. Thank you for being with us and helping us understand it.
Anytime, Jay.
All righty. Well, folks, that is all for this segment. We're going to talk to David McElvenny right after the commercial break, so don't go away. I'll be right back with you then, and David will join me.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSXV and GTBAF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their district-scale Dixie Project in the renowned Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having made multiple high-grade near-surface gold discoveries, GBR's capital efficiency has allowed them to be fully funded to complete a very active 300,000-meter drill program through 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best-performing exploration stocks in the last 3 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have David McElvenny with me once again. David is the president of the McElvenny Financial Companies, McElvenny Wealth Management, and ICA, a precious metals brokerage firm. And, he's been on us with us a number of times in the past, so I'm not going to read his whole bio, but you can catch that on our website, or better yet, to learn more about David and all the things that take place under the McElvenny umbrella. Go to McElvenny.com. I think that's a good place to start anyway. Thanks for joining me again, David.
As always, great to be with you again.
It's always good to have you with me. We've titled our show today, Living and Investing in a Dystopian Digital Currency World. And I sort of picked up on that topic in part from your weekly podcast, which I listened to last week. Digital currency, how close do you think we are to, well, we have digital currency now for sure, but how close do you think we are to seeing regular currency, paper money outlawed?
Yeah, I think one of the great ironies is going to be this notion of a utopian digital currency world turning dystopian, where everything that was promised in terms of freedoms, flexibility, and frankly, privacy and opacity all of a sudden gets turned into a bit of a control freak's nightmare. And I'm the dystopian aspect, I think, is where we're going. It's not where we're at today. And one of the things I mentioned in last week's McIlvany Weekly Commentary was that the central bank digital currency launched by the Chinese here in the last several weeks is really the template for other central banks to follow. And, you know, they want the ability to effectively implement monetary policy, and digital currency gives them a few tools they've never had before, or actually it takes the old tools and just sharpens them. So a lot there. But, yeah, I think dystopians is an accurate description.
Hmm. To what extent do you think this pandemic has sort of accelerated this process?
Well, as someone once said, crisis compresses time, and perhaps we would have gotten here, but on a longer time frame. And what we have now is an openness, not only because of the development of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Ripple and others, but also just seeing that the digital universe is a universe that we're comfortably existing in. What are we recording on today for this show? How do we do our Zoom calls if not in the office space? So this notion that whether it's digital commerce, digital communications, there's just a greater ease with the whole ecosystem. And the idea that cash being a burden, to your first point and your first question, physical cash is going the way of the dodo bird. And it's something that I think central banks would like to get rid of. They've wanted to for some time and just haven't been able to. Now you look at what was experimented with in India a year or so ago, removal of their currency and a move towards the digital under the guise of financial inclusion. That's a fancy euphemism for let's take care of the little people. Of course, we should all understand at this point that when the government says I'm here to help, you should run from the room with your hair on fire. But nevertheless, that's what happened in India. That's what is happening in China today with their digital currency. And Jerome Powell has said, we don't need to be the first. We just need to make sure we get it right. And so, yes, we'll have our own version of a digital currency. And bad news there is that, I mean, for all the good news of convenience and things like that, the bad news is it does mean that we're moving towards a closed financial system with all that entails.
And what might be some of the things that it entails? Give us an idea of how that might be hurtful to our freedom and our liberties.
I had a conversation with Carmen Reinhart, who at the time was professor at Harvard, and she described it as corralling investors. And once, like so many cattle, once they're corralled, you can direct and control them. And so the closing of the financial system is really giving investors what in philosophy might be called the fallacy of false alternative. You can choose A or you can choose B, but that is all you can choose from. And so you choose whatever you like as long as it's A or B. And so that idea of guiding or herding or corralling is really important for monetary policy implementation, because let's say, for instance, people don't like the idea that their savings are being inflated away, and they decide that they want to exit, quote-unquote, exit the system. But that's not option A or option B. That's option C, D, E, or F, and those aren't open to you anymore. So the value for a central planner of closing the financial system is that you get to more effectively operate with a fallacy of false alternative and determine the course that you consider best for the economy. As a freedom-loving American, that kind of grates me the wrong way. But it's very efficient. The Chinese have experimented with it. There's a little less freedom there than there is here, so perhaps there's a little less social pushback. I'm hoping that we aren't just interested in convenience here in the U.S., but notions of freedom and liberty still prevail.
They do, and I happened to watch Kyle Bass speak this morning on CNBC, and he was warning about what the Chinese are doing, and he's fearful that we may be lumped in or sucked into that system or something like that, and really is hoping that we will resist. But it occurred to me as you were speaking that maybe this the government and the central banks have just solved their financing issues, their financing requirements for trillions upon trillions of dollars that are being created out of thin air, to the extent they need to. They can't continue to create endless amounts of money from nothing. They might just get us to help them pay for it. And we'll have that choice A or B, I guess, maybe. Be limited to that.
Yeah, we're all familiar with inflation as a tool. And, you know, if you go back to John Maynard Keynes, one of the things that he was sort of set to accomplish was getting capital out of capitalism. He described it as destruction of the rentier class. And that basically meant if you had extra savings, quote-unquote capital, and could put them to work for your benefit, maybe it was a rental property or something like that, he would consider that idle capital and dead money, and he wanted every dollar circulating through the system. And so what we are moving towards in sort of a top-down managed financial system, and if Kyle Bass is concerned about that sort of the temptation to manage from the top down, learning from the Chinese and applying it here in the United States, a friend of ours, Russell Napier, used to say, if you want to anticipate the future, you ought to study Eastern Europe. You'll learn a lot about what's coming our direction from a public policy standpoint. But this notion of closing the financial system, you've got inflation as sort of the right hook, and then the uppercut comes from financial repression. And financial repression is holding interest rates at a very low level and basically extracting value from a savings base a different way. And this is the beauty, I've put that in quotes, but the beauty of a closed financial system and being digital is that you can attach a sell-by date to the digital currency, and it forces the money that would have been, again, in Keynes's view, dead capital or the ridiculous capital of the rentier class, it forces it into the system. Because here's the carrot and stick. You get to spend it today, or it's worth less tomorrow. And how much less? Well, again, that's determined by the central planners. Maybe it's worth 2 cents less. Maybe it's worth 25 cents less. Maybe it's worth 50% less. But the motivation is to get that money into the financial system and see that there is an increase in velocity where that money's turning around. Bass is a lot of effectiveness on an assumption that we know what's best for other people. And again, this is one of those things that's annoying to me, I think to you too.
Oh, for sure.
The notion of a top-down managed system takes individual rights and individual decision out of the picture and says, we can determine for you because we're smarter. We've got better education. We've got the experience. We're just that kind of group. It's like the pigs and animal farm.
It is very concerning, for sure. It is the antithesis of what our founding fathers had willed for us and fought for us to give us, this idea of the individual being important and being sovereign and the government here to serve us rather than the other way around. But we are now being vassals of the state. I guess we are being asked to serve the elite more and more. It would seem that way in any event. So if you're only given a limited number of options, then what can you do, David? I mean, we still have some options now. Is there anything we can do now to try to prepare for this dystopian future?
I think one of the things you have to do is reconsider the traditional mix of 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, or depending on your age and demography, maybe switch it the other way around. bonds will become what they once were called, certificates of confiscation. And so that part of the portfolio is no longer a place to go for safety. I grant you, in a snap second, in a deflationary moment where a particular asset class is circling the drain, people may want to own bonds instead of something else. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a long road here, not a short-term event. A long road where you're talking about major capital destruction in the bond market. I think you want to own real things. The way we've positioned our asset management company is to own four categories of real things: precious metals mining companies, global natural resource companies, infrastructure where there's a hard asset with a cash flow attached to it, and specialty real estate is the fourth category that we're interested in. And again, it's a real thing with cash flow attached to it. Two of the four are cyclical, two of the four are non-cyclical. And then we manage the risk according to the cyclical nature of the commodities in question, if we're talking global natural resources and precious metals, because there's times to own those things and there's times to not own them because of their very violent volatility. But nevertheless, the four categories make up real assets, tangible, hard assets. And we think in a period of central bank experimentation, monetary largesse, this is a better approach. It's a better approach to gaining income, which is absolutely necessary. And it's a better approach to preserving value and even positioning yourself for growth.
Mm-hmm. What was the second category, David? I didn't catch it.
We have precious metals stocks, global natural resources.
Okay.
And then infrastructure and specialty real estate.
And then looking for some of, I would imagine with the precious metals mining companies, you're probably producers and not so much exploration companies.
Precisely. And the main reason for that is, again, with more of an income focus, what we learned from the South African mining shares in the 1970s is that when they're making money as producers, there's also generally healthy dividends to receive. And we're already seeing that with the majors. So given the fact that our investor expectation is both for conservative growth, appreciation and income, the income component's more important. There's no doubt that there's opportunity with an exploration company. It just doesn't fit the profile that most of our investors are looking for. So we were right, positioned as we are with a decent cost basis and precious metals miners, the producers, there's some pretty attractive dividend yields.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly I'm focused on the little guys that are finding the deposits that those big producers are looking for. That's another exciting area, but certainly doesn't have the cash flow, that's for sure. And real estate, David, are you looking at probably REITs or real estate investment companies that produce cash flow and pay good dividends?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely looking for anything publicly traded. So REITs is the space that we frequent most. And especially real estate put us in good stead even this last year, where a lot of rents did not get paid. If you were in an apartment or particular retail type properties, those are of course no interest to us. But logistics, storage facilities, cold storage. There's a variety of ways to approach the real estate market, which are just different. And we got to focus on very high quality credit. And our worst case scenario last year was a REIT that collected, I think its worst quarter was 98% of its rents. Even in the midst of one of the worst crises in modern history, global pandemic, we had an accurate appraisal on both the credit risk and the portfolio quality that is necessary to kind of walk through a tough patch.
If I'm remembering correctly, the last time we spoke, you were not so concerned about the demise of the dollar. Alistair MacLeod, who we have on frequently, is. That seems to be a major theme of his. I don't think you were that concerned about inflation. Are you more so now?
I think we're always concerned about inflation, probably not hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. And we're definitely concerned about the demise of the dollar, just not as a cataclysmic one-off event. It's something that is happening in front of us. It's one of the reasons why I was very interested to see the development of the digital currency in China, because one of the things that we have lacked, and I would say from last conversation to this, perhaps one of the shifts is this very issue. You go back to The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, a book that was written in the 1960s, mm-hmm. and the thesis is basically that a paradigm does not change, a worldview does not change until the anomalies and the problems of that worldview are better solved by a new paradigm. And what we've had is problems with the dollar for a long time. The dollar paradigm, the monetary system based on the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency, is problematic, period, full stop. And you can say, okay, well, because of this, that, and the other, it's going to end. Yes, but what's the alternative? What's the replacement? Mm-hmm. And for some time, it was thought the euro might be that. But you look at the dysfunction there, and a friend of ours used to call it the Frankenstein monster, as in the French franc and the German Stein, kind of a play on words. And it is. It's a currency Frankenstein. And it's very dysfunctional. It's not going to replace the U.S. dollar. But it may be that the digital yuan or RMB is a replacement. And so that's what I'm most interested. Yes, I am concerned about the demise of the dollar, but only on a time frame where the problems which are apparent with our currency can be addressed by a new alternative.
Mm-hmm. As long as that alternative doesn't completely put us lock us in our homes or in a jail cell forever, I suppose. But you need to look on the positive side, David, and you certainly, I think, keep things in the proper perspective, and I'm grateful to you for that. But what about, I think I heard you talking about cash. I didn't hear you mention. Do you keep some cash in your portfolio? What sort of cash reserves do you have for a rainy day? I mean, let's say that the interest rates let's say the Fed loses control of the rates and the dollar starts to lose its, you know, it's that people just don't have confidence anymore and they dump it. Or at some turning point when there is this new system that comes into play, interest rates start to spike and go through the roof. Is that a danger that you see? I mean, we're seeing, higher rates. Recently, we've seen higher rates. Michael Oliver, who was with us a little while ago, thinks that treasuries and gold will go in the same direction here for a while until it breaks apart. But do you see the need at this? I mean, my own sense of feeling is that I should have more cash than I have in my. I just feel very uncomfortable about the stock market right now. And I know you do too, because I heard some of your remarks last week. But what are your thoughts about how should you have some cash around right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the bond market and you look at interest rates, there's a lot of risk that's underestimated there. Mm-hmm. And yes, I think rates can go considerably higher, driven by market forces and dynamics in contrast to what the Fed and other central banks would want in terms of a direction lower. There's this issue of being in cash and being concerned about devaluation, and yet that is an issue which is a slow burn issue, mm-hmm. versus what you addressed as a real fast burn issue of mm-hmm. volatility in the stock market. Mm-hmm. Stock market can lose between 10% and 15% in three sessions. Mm-hmm. It might lose 50% over a 6-week period of time. And our current inflation, at even the worst case, 50% is going to take you decades to get there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, which is better, which is worse. They're both less than ideal, but I'd rather be in cash than in equities today. Mm-hmm. And even with the positions that we have, we've moderated those and are not at full allocations. We've been as high as 50% cash. We're currently closer to 30%, but we feel like we've got plenty of dry powder to add to existing positions. Very strong businesses, strong assets being developed, and very solid balance sheets. Nevertheless, prices can suffer greatly. And so we have cash opportunistically, defensively, and we just have to sit with the tension of not having every dollar invested. It comes at a cost. We know that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we recognize the cost on the fast burn issue, market volatility, as being far greater.
Yeah, maybe you could just share with our listeners some of the signals that you talked about of a bubble nearing its end. You talked a little bit about that on your last podcast.
Gosh, there are so many different signals. I mean, if you wanted to look at things from the standpoint of how investors are in engaging in the market today, you know, everyone knows the term risk on versus risk off. Risk on is when you're pretty enthusiastic about prices going higher. And today we've got that measured by margin debt. Not only are people willing to bet 100% of their money, but they're willing to borrow money from the house. And bet even more. So $814 billion was the last number on margin debt, highest we've ever seen. And, you know, that comes from the Q4 Z1 report. You can look at broker-dealer loans as another indication of incredible leverage in the marketplace. Look at what happened to Archegos, this family office. Yeah. You know, is not leveraged with margin debt, but they've set up derivative contracts with a number of prime brokers. And, you know, it's a guy who very effectively turned $200 million into close to a $20 billion personal fortune. And, you know, took his winnings as a hedge fund manager, the original $200 million stake, turns it into $20 billion, but guess what happens when leverage positions move against you? He's done and closes up shop in a week. It's all gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, how do you lose $20 billion in a week? well, we just got to see it. And so, again, what does that suggest? It suggests that there is a tremendous amount of leverage in the system. We could look at the SPACs, that phenomenon of special purpose acquisition vehicles. Mm-hmm. That would be another example. Where, you know, there's been 288 SPACs that have gone public just this year, raising $94 billion. That's up from – and that's just in a quarter.
Yeah.
That's up from last year's total take in terms of the IPOs related to special purpose acquisition companies, $83 billion. So from 83 last year, 94 in the first quarter of this year, and last year's number was six times what it was in 2019. I mean, this is remarkable. It's really remarkable.
David, we just have a couple of minutes left. I'd like you just to tell our listeners again about some of the services that you provide under the McIlvany umbrella. You have ICA, which is I think of as a coin company, as a company that sells precious metals. But you're more than that, and I think you even provide an opportunity for people to have their portfolios assessed or looked at. Am I right about that?
That's right. I mean, from beginning to end, whether it's a precious metals portfolio or an equity portfolio, bond portfolio, my specialty when I worked with Morgan Stanley years ago was with municipal bonds. So we're happy to look at it and give you a second opinion on just about everything. Mm-hmm. Precious metals business, my parents started in 1972. It's expanded to be a full-fledged brokerage company relating to gold ownership in every form. One of the most unique tools that we offer for investors, and I would encourage your listeners to look at vaulted.com, mm-hmm. V-A-U-L-T-E-D, vaulted.com. It's a great way to save and have an alternative banking program or savings program denominated in gold. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is very innovative and helpful. We have a unique tax structure as it relates to that particular product. So something that, frankly, nobody else in the world offers.
Mm-hmm.
The asset management company we mentioned earlier is kind of a complementary thing. Think of us as kind of the ideal football team. You've got the offensive coordinator looking at the hard asset strategies. In the four categories we talked about earlier, where growth and income are the priority. And then the defensive coordinators, where we're putting together an insurance-type portfolio invested in gold, silver, and the platinum group metals. And we look at those very opportunistically to be able to trade the ratios between the metals and gain in ounces, mm-hmm. even when the prices aren't necessarily moving to your favor. So a very productive way to approach the metals. We've got five decades experience doing that.
All right. And I think it's possible also to to put some gold in your IRA through your services as well, right?
Yeah, and in fact, going back to the 80s when they allowed that, we were the first company to do so. So
All right. Yeah,
kind of groundbreaking in that regard. Yep.
MacroVision.com
is a great way to follow us. Or weeklycommentary.com if you want to listen into our thoughts each week.
Excellent. Thank you very much, David. That is it. That's all the time we have, unfortunately. But thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. Greatly appreciate it, and we'll look to do it again sometime, hopefully, in the near future. All right. Thank you so much. Well, that is it for this week, folks. Next week, I'm going to talk to John Rubino. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me again to talk about SK Mining, really some exciting things taking place there, and maybe a surprise guest or two. Well, until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.